This is Foul Ball Area.
Foul Ball Area.
A special Friday edition bringing you exclusive interviews with baseball figures from around the world.
I don't know if you've seen the story recently that Manny Ramirez was considering coming out of retirement age 114. You know, I was actually the person that broke that story.
While I'm calling the game, news gets out that the NCAA tournament is going to be played in front of no fan. So all of this is happening while I'm on the ACC Network broadcast.
He's super excited for being in the Rays organization, just how there's such an analytical organization, such an organization that puts a precedent on that.
Now, here's today's episode of Foul Ball Area.
It's Friday. You know what that means. A special guest on Foul Ball Area. Happy Friday, everybody. Thank you for tuning in to today's edition of the podcast. I'm Matthew Atkins. We do have a very good show for you today. It was a really fun episode, and I enjoyed putting it together. I think you all will enjoy it as well. We don't have just one special guest on today's edition. No, we've got two great interviews coming up for you over the next half hour. And for my Rockingham County, Harrisonburg, Shenandoah Valley area listeners, both of these interviews have ties to the Valley, so I think you'll be interested in them. But for everybody else out there listening to the podcast, these interviews cover national topics as well. So I think that this is a very good episode, great interviews, good personalities, and I really enjoyed putting it together, and I hope you guys enjoy listening to today's episode of Foul Ball Area. First up, joining me on the podcast, he is the sports editor at the Daily News Record in Harrisonburg, and he covers the Nationals for Federal Baseball. David Driver joining me on Foul Ball Area today. David, how are you doing today?
Good, Matt. Thanks for calling, and nice to talk to you.
I appreciate you coming on. I see this article that you just put out this morning says, what a difference a year makes for the Washington Nationals, and that couldn't be more true. What is going on with this team this season?
Yeah, we could probably run that story the rest of September, but for really diehard National fans, they might remember the huge comeback a year ago today at home against the Mets. They scored 7 runs in the bottom of the ninth after the Mets had scored 5 in the top of the ninth, and Kurt Suzuki gets a 3-run homer, and they win it, wild game, and then, that was kind of the beginning of their magic ride, right? I mean, a month later, they won the wild card, and of course, we all know they won the World Series, but it is maybe a nice little framework for a year later. Obviously, they are struggling. That's probably a polite way to say it. 12-22, one of the worst records in baseball. I think, to answer your question, I think, a lot of the worst-case scenarios are coming true. We're seeing an old team that might be hard for some people to believe. I mean, you got Juan Soto and Victor Robles and Trey Turner and now Luis Garcia. But if you look at their everyday positions of the 8, you're seeing them get old in front of your eyes at 4 of those spots, and then they're in good shape at the other 4, I think.
What do you think is the biggest weakness of this team from last season to this year?
Wow, great question, and probably the answer is more than one. You would think that starting pitching, that's what they've always talked about. That's how they won the World Series last year, but that's probably right now the problem. And it's probably the depth of starting pitching, not at the major league level, but throughout the organization. Now, we've seen them call up people like Will Crow and obviously Fetty and both right now, take up 2 of the 5 spots in the rotations. And both, he has not won a game this year. The Nats have only won 1 of, I believe, 6 starts that he's made. He and Fetty are very similar. They came up through the organization, high draft picks. Fetty at this point has seemed to pass both as a starting pitcher. He's going a little bit deeper into games. But really, at this point, if you've got 5 starting pitchers and you're throwing Fetty and Voth, that's 40% of the time. Basically, when Voth starts, you don't have much of a chance to win. It's kind of, to be blunt about it. And even Scherzer. I saw Scherzer pitch last night here in Philadelphia. He hasn't been his dominant self. And if you're looking long term, Scherzer's 36 years old, and a lot of the position players are up in their 30s as well. So, as much as it's hard to believe, starting pitching right now actually might be one of the weaknesses of this team.
And of course, part of that is Steven Strasburg out for the season with carpal tunnel. It's only the first year of his contract, but do you think the team is kind of regretting giving such a big contract to Strasburg, who's dealt with a lot of injuries over his career?
Yeah, I don't think so, actually. And this was talked about on DC radio as well. I don't think so. I think by now we know who Steven Strasburg is. We know his history. We know when he is healthy, he's one of the best pitchers in baseball. But, you know, injuries have been a part of his narrative, you know, really since he signed out of college. So I don't think so. I think, you know, and a lot of this has to be looked at the lens of you won a World Series last year, you know, with him as the MVP. That doesn't mean that now, you know, with all the challenges they have as an organization, you just push that under the rug. And we can talk about the minor league system later, but you did win a World Series. That's the goal. And I think what's happened with this club, and this is way before your time, but a lot of, you know, Valley and baseball fans might remember the Orioles winning it in 1983 with a veteran club. They brought back a lot of the same guys. There's a feel-good feeling. You know, you want to bring back guys, bring the band back together one more time, right? They did that with Hudson and Suzuki and Gomes and down the line, and now we're seeing them get old. And maybe not good news for Nats fans, it took the Orioles several years to recover after that 83 World Series. They got old, and it took them a while to get back. I don't think the Nats are in that bad of a shape, but I do think the Strasburg signing, if, you know, the Learners felt like they could only sign Strasburg or Anthony Rendon. That's what they told us. We can only sign one. So if you're a fan and you want to quibble about that and say, oh, I wish we just took Rendon, I think I'd probably rather have a workhorse of a starting pitcher in the long term.
Talking with David Driver, covers the Washington Nationals for Federal Baseball. What's the feeling around the team? Because last year, of course, they started the season, 19-31? And
correct.
They ended up turning it around, but last year they had a lot more games to turn it around. This year, they're already halfway through the season. So what's the feeling around the team? Are they really out of it, or are they still optimistic they can make a postseason run?
Well, you know, we were on the Zoom call before and after the game yesterday with Dave Martinez, and he was asked pretty much those same questions. He happened to see the standings on MLB.com the other day and said, oh, we're not as far back as I thought we were. Well, even with a really bad record, you know, they're only a couple games behind that eighth spot. But, of course, the problem is there are so many teams ahead of them, and that was the same case last year. But you're right. They only have 3 weeks left. I mean, if you're trying to read in between the lines, I mean, I'm not saying they've thrown it in at all. They're professional players. You know, they've got veterans in their lineup. But the signs are not good. You know, just the last night, you know, I saw them get shut out by Wheeler of the Phillies, and there just wasn't a lot of spark there. And to be frank, I'm not saying they don't care, but it just doesn't have a good vibe to it. You know, they won the World Series, and this year obviously is so different. My thought was, if they can sneak into the playoffs, they could get on another run, just like last year with a veteran club that only had played 60 games. Now, it's just, you know, besides Trey Turner and Juan Soto, there's just not a lot there offensively.
Well, the one player who is really there offensively, Juan Soto, I'm sure even with everything going on around the team, it's still really fun to watch him.
Yeah, I mean, boy, you know, it is pretty amazing. You know, Dave Martinez kind of runs out of adjectives to describe him. His plate discipline is so good. He hits home runs to the opposite field. I mean, he's hitting the ball further to left field than a lot of right-handed pull hitters. Just, you know, has a really good knack of what to swing at and what not to swing at. You know, he's beyond his years. He really is. I got to see him in Hagerstown when he was coming up through the minors, actually a couple weeks before he was promoted. And you know, one game usually doesn't mean anything. But, you know, I remember that one game, seeing him in Hagerstown. You know, he came up to bat, bases loaded, bottom of the ninth, against a lefty, and the lefty threw him five curveballs in a row, and he fouled off all five. and he eventually lined out the left field, you know, to end the game. But, you know, boy, what a special player. You can tell he loves to play. I mean, I'm sure if folks watch the games on TV, he's always smiling. And, you know, he had a delay to his season because of COVID. And, boy, he's on a tear. So, yeah, he's just a really incredible player.
What's going on with Carter Kieboom? He was a really hyped up prospect, came up and didn't really play too well and got sent back down, right?
Yeah, really good point. Really good observation. Again, Dave Martinez has been asked about this. I did reach out to Carter's brother, who is actually his agent, early in the week, and he politely declined to comment. That might be a little telling. Davey Martinez was asked the other day the difference between Luis Garcia and Carter Kieboom, two young players. And after, it was kind of enlightening. He said when Garcia strikes out, you know, he comes back to the bench, and he turns the page and he heads back to the field and plays defense. When Carter Kieboom comes back to the bench after striking out, you can tell it's really wearing on him in so many words, and I'm kind of paraphrasing Martinez. So, they didn't say a whole lot about Kieboom being sent to the alternate site in Fredericksburg. I thought we would see him back. I still think we could. I guess right now it's probably more not just the physical. His fielding was great. I mean, he set a record for assists for a third baseman for the Nats in one game in Baltimore. His fielding was really good. It just the hitting, he wasn't hitting for power at all. So I don't know. I don't know if they'll bring him back here in the final 3 weeks. I mean, if they're out of it, I think if they're eliminated, then they might bring him back up. I just think right now it's all about what he's doing in Fredericksburg to get his confidence back.
So the trade deadline 2020 Major League Baseball season came and went this past week. Monday was the trade deadline at 4 p.m. Eastern. The Nationals didn't really do anything there. Are you surprised that they were inactive?
Very surprised. For the first time in years, Mike Rizzo did not make a trade at the deadline. They have more, basically mortgaged their future almost every year to get veterans to make a run for a title, and last year it worked. I really was. A lot of people felt like, I mean, they didn't do anything. They stood pat. Some people would have been happy for them to replenish the minor league system and trade off some of these veterans. Because if you look at their roster, there's a good number of veterans who I think at this point will not be back next year. They could have traded some of those to stock their farm system. On the other hand, you know, on Monday, they were closer to that wild card spot. I thought that they would go out and get a starting pitcher. They just brought, I don't know if your fans know this, but you have to be in the 60-player pool. And they brought two young players who had played at Hagerstown in low A. They brought them to Fredericksburg about a week ago. That made them eligible to be traded. So if you read between the lines, you thought, oh, they're going to maybe trade some of these young infielders for a starting pitcher. I mean, the Orioles were able to trade Tommy Malone for some prospects. So, yeah, I was shocked. I thought that certainly they would go one of two ways. To not make a trade to me was really unbelievable.
Well, you mentioned Tommy Malone, of course, the Braves trading for him from the Orioles. That was the only move they made. I'm a Braves fan myself, so I was a little disappointed in that. It was certainly an interesting trade deadline. Of course, in a 60-game season and the trade deadline's halfway through the season, you don't really know what kind of team you have at that point. So it was a really interesting deadline this year.
Yeah, it was strange. There were a lot of components to it. Somebody made a really good point, too, that with the pandemic, you know, if you trade a player, you know, you've got to get them to the next place, and that, you know, that's not always easy. The player may not want to do that. So, yeah, it was a very interesting trade deadline. I think there was a lot of talk of the Braves going after some other pitchers besides Tommy Malone. But, you know, to get a veteran lefty, I mean, that means the Nats could have probably had him for, you know, something as well. But, I really like the Braves. I mean, a lot of people do, and we may want to talk about that later. But, yeah, the Braves have really put themselves in a good position.
So you mentioned the Nationals minor league system a couple of times. I know teams like the Padres and the Rays, they have really good, really deep systems right now. What is the Nationals farm system looking like these days?
Yeah, well, and, of course, you obviously have to preface. I do try to every year get around to all the affiliates within the Mid-Atlantic region and see them in person. Obviously, you know, nobody's been able to do that this year, so it's kind of, you know, maybe not a fair assessment, but MLB Pipeline just earlier this week came out with their rankings, and the Nats are now 30 out of 30. They've fallen steadily the last 4 or 5 years, and again, a couple reasons for that. One, you know, Juan Soto and Victor Robles and now Luis Garcia, you know, they've graduated from the system and are now helping the major league team, and that's the goal, right? The other goal of a minor league system is to develop prospects for trade chips, and they've done that. They've done that at deadline several years in the past, you know, to get veteran players like Daniel Hudson and others. So that's how you use your farm system. That said, I think it's fair to say that it's getting kind of bare. I mean, like right now, we've got Suzuki and Gomes as your Nats catchers. Well, how long are they going to be able to be your catchers? I don't know of an everyday catcher that's ready in the farm system for the Nationals. That said, you know, you've produced Juan Soto, you've produced Victor Robles, Luis Garcia, you know, probably will be a long-term second baseman. So, you know, it's half glass, you know, glass is half full, half empty, right? But the system really is lacking in depth at several positions at this point.
So the Nationals right now on the road in Philadelphia taking on the Phillies, who just may be the hottest team in baseball right now. They have certainly turned their season around. What's this series been like? How are the Phillies looking to you?
Yeah, it's always kind of fun to come up here. This is actually the seventh series in a row I've been able to see the Nats in Philly. It's always fun to listen to talk radio up in Philly, where it's pretty intense. Somebody basically said that they need to make the playoffs or the GM should be fired, and I haven't been following them that much. But they are doing nicely. There was a wild game at the Braves Sunday night on the Sunday night game on national television. They do have a roster that should make the playoffs. I mean, obviously the bullpen has been a major problem, but they've, you know, made some trades at the deadline to try to alleviate some of that. Last year the Nats were 14-5 against the Phillies, and this year the Phillies are 5-0 against the Nats. So it's been a real turnaround. I mean, the Nats have not scored in the last two games, you know, two shutouts in a row. For the Phillies, they're on a roll. They've got a good lineup. They got a couple of UVA players on the roster that are helping. And I think it looks, you know, the Phillies have to feel pretty good about if they can just get in the playoffs. They've got Nola is just a great pitcher that he just confounds the Nationals on a regular basis. So the Phillies are looking good. I don't think they're as good as the Braves, but. The Philly fans have to feel pretty good about making the playoffs for the first time in a long time.
So I do want to circle back around to Juan Soto real quick, because I love having this debate about Juan Soto or Ronald Acuna Jr. Which player would you take if you could have one to build your team around?
Yeah, I've seen that. You know, people have put that on Twitter, and I did it a little bit different the other day. I said, if you could take two players, you know, who would you take? say Ozzie Albies and then Juan Soto and Victor Robles, or Juan Soto and Trey Turner. Trey Turner is maybe not quite as young anymore. But to answer your question, I guess, you know, I'm biased a little bit, or because I see the Nationals on a more regular basis than I see the Braves. And of course, this year, you know, I'm not getting to see the Braves hardly at all. Usually, they make three trips to Washington. Get to see. He's just a great player. It's fun to watch. I might take the Braves star over Soto just because of defense and coverage in the outfield. I mean, Soto has turned himself into a really good left fielder. It's perfect spot for him. Left field and they're both great players. You can't go wrong. So I'm dodging your question. But I get to see Soto more on a regular basis. So it's hard to argue with either one of them.
All right. Well, David, I appreciate you taking some time and talking to me today. Enjoy the rest of your trip in Philadelphia.
Great. Thanks so much, and best of luck to you.
That was David Driver, the sports editor at Daily News Record in Harrisonburg, and a stringer for Federal Baseball covering the Washington Nationals. The Nationals currently in last place in the National League East. They are 9 games back of the Atlanta Braves, so I'm happy about that. But it's not a good season if you're a Washington Nationals fan, especially coming off of a World Series title. You expect them to be a little bit more competitive. They open a weekend series against the Braves in Atlanta today at 4:10 p.m. So I'm looking forward to that because the Braves will get to beat up on the Nationals a little bit. I always love that. But thank you to David for coming on today's episode and talking about the Nationals season with us. I really appreciate it. Our next guest plays for the Stewart's Draft Diamondbacks in the RCBL, and he plays his college ball at Division III Randolph-Macon in the Old Dominion Athletic Conference. Will Haas joining me on today's episode of Foul Ball Area. Will, you had your best RCBL season yet, a really good season for the Diamondbacks this year. What do you attribute that to this year?
You know, honestly, I think it was just really hard work, you know. Also, you know, not having a baseball season, I just had a lot more time to, you know, practice on my own and get better at certain things that, you know, I needed to get better at. And I think the competition of the league, you know, helped me get better in general, and helped attribute to me having the year I had.
Yeah, I want to go back to that. You said not having a spring season. You, of course, play college ball at Randolph-Macon. What was it like when the spring season was canceled this year?
Yeah, so we were actually having a really good year. We were up to number one in the country in one of the polls. We played the hardest schedule in the country, and we were 14-1. So we had a really good feeling that we could make a deep run, you know, whether it was to win a national championship or get close to it. And when they started talking about, you know, the chance of this happening, we were actually playing a game, the chance of everything getting canceled. We were playing York College in Pennsylvania, and our president actually sent out a email during the game saying that everyone had to go home, but spring sports could stay, and as long as there were people to play, we were going to play. Our basketball team was also in the Elite Eight of the NCAA tournament, so he wanted them to play also, obviously, because they had a good chance to win the national championship. And not even 5 minutes after that happened, the NCAA came out and said everything's canceled. So we had a little false glimmer of hope that we were going to be able to stay and compete. And then, you know, after 5 minutes, we knew it was over. And it was a really somber occasion, as you can imagine. We ended up winning the game. But, you know, all our seniors knew that was their last game. And it was really tough.
So do seniors not get that extra year of eligibility in Division III like they do in D1?
They actually do, and we have, I think 9 of our seniors coming back. You know, at that point, we didn't know that was going to happen.
Okay.
But, yeah, now that we found out the NCAA is letting people come back, I think, yeah, 9 of our seniors are coming back. So we should have a pretty good year again this year, but we'll see. Hopefully we can play.
So what did you do in between that time when – your college season was canceled and the RCBL season started? That was a couple months in there with the RCBL starting late. What did you do during that time?
So honestly, I mean, there wasn't a lot to do. So I sort of thought of it as an opportunity to get better. I hit at one of the public parks in Charlottesville every day. I worked on my speed because that was one of my things I really needed to work on. So I got with a strength and conditioning coach for that. Defense, I've never really gotten the chance to focus just on defense, and I did a lot of defensive drills trying to get better on that. You know, I knew in the time of quarantine, there were definitely going to be people who weren't going to take advantage of it, of all the free time, and really there was nothing else for me to do. So I was like, I might as well take advantage of it and get better.
You guys had a little bit of a rough season and then a tough draw in the quarterfinals playing the pennant winner and the eventual champions, Broadway Bruins. What was that series like playing against Broadway in the playoffs?
It was pretty neat, actually, you know, playing at JMU. It was an awesome atmosphere. Especially as a college baseball player, you know, in summer ball, obviously the goal is to win a championship, but in summer ball also it's to develop. And I was pretty excited that we got to play a team with the talent of Broadway in the playoff series. You know, honestly, I think we had a pretty good chance to get against them. We sort of missed out on some opportunities in the first game and early in the second game. You know, if one thing goes differently in either game, who knows? We sort of had the right pitchers we needed to, and we knew we had the offense that we could keep up with them. You know, we had a pretty powerful lineup from top to bottom. I honestly think we were the deepest lineup in the league. It was just sometimes our pitching let us down a little bit, but I was really excited to play them just because, you know, the guys like DeLauder and Reese Snyder and those guys, being able to play as many D1 guys helps me and the other college kids on the Diamondbacks to get ready for a college season.
Yeah, how has playing in the RCBL the past couple of seasons helped you in your college ball?
Mm-hmm. Well, so I started playing the RCBL right out of high school, the summer right after, and I remember facing all the ODAC guys, pretty much, you know, from the guys from Shenandoah and EMU, the guys who I would be playing in college, and I remember thinking, this is awesome. This is who I'm going to be facing when I get to Randolph-Macon, and it's great. And it definitely got me ready for my freshman year to face the caliber of arms that are in the ODAC. Then my sophomore year, same thing. You know, I was just happy to see some of the guys. But now with this past year, I mean, that was awesome. The RCBL this past year was amazing. I think I tweeted out earlier, I was like, about, there was a video, I guess, one of the ending of the championship series when Broadway walked it off. I was like, the RCBL is electric. And it really was. Every single game was so competitive. And seeing the types of arms that we faced, I mean, it wasn't even just Division I guys. There were minor league pitchers. There were independent ball pitchers. It was great. I mean, I feel more, you know, ready to start our college season now than I think I have been in the last 2 years, just from the caliber of talent I played all summer.
We're talking with Will Haas of the Stewart's Draft Diamondbacks and Randolph-Macon. A lot of talent all around the RCBL, like you said, this summer. And one of those talented guys was on Stewart's Draft, Tanner Morris, who, of course, played at Stewart's Draft one season, then went to UVA, played his college ball with the Cavaliers, and then got drafted by the Blue Jays. And then there wasn't a minor league season this year, so he came back to the Valley and played in the RCBL with Stewart's Draft. What was it like getting to play with him again this year?
It was really cool just to be around a guy like that, honestly. You pick up so much knowledge from him. His baseball IQ is so high. Just, you know, it's almost like it rubs off on you. And so just to have – I think that also really helped me have a successful season was having him there, you know, in the summer. All before even the season started, I was hitting with him, you know, going to in the cages. It's really neat to play with someone like that because his baseball knowledge was incredible, and it just rubbed right off on everyone else on the team, it seemed like. And just to sort of pick his brain, it was incredible.
So you're back at Randolph-Macon for the fall semester. How has the semester been going for you so far? Is everything a little weird? Are you worried that things are going to get shut down again in a few weeks? What's going on in Randolph-Macon?
So I live in an off-campus house, so I'm pretty I can do a lot of things that people maybe in dorms can't. They're very strict in the dorms. You can only go into your certain building. You have to wear masks at all times, obviously. And right now we're in online classes for the first 2 weeks. So there hasn't been a lot of cases at Randolph-Macon. I think we got our first three yesterday in the first 2 weeks. Unlike I know JMU just got sent home for a little bit, because they had a lot of cases, but the baseball aspect of it, I think Coach Hedrick, who's our head coach, and all of our assistants have really handled it well. They set up a plan in place that they've been working on since really all of it started. And so we're sort of going out to the field on our own right now, just hitting, and then after 2 weeks we're gonna get into some smaller group stuff, and you know, so on and so on, and just try to advance it as it goes. Obviously if more cases come out, it could be out of our hands, but I'm feeling pretty confident that we're gonna have a season, hopefully, at least. But yeah, no, I think it's just nice to be back, honestly, just to be around the guys again, even though it's in a minimized capacity. It's been great.
Yeah, hopefully you guys do get to have a season next spring. And if you do, what are you expecting from that season and from the team?
Mm-hmm. Well, the team in general, like I said, I think we have a real shot to win a national championship. You know, we have 9 of our seniors coming back. A lot of them were starters or, you know, top guys in our bullpen. Some of the freshmen that are coming back or freshmen that are coming in are pretty talented. From what I've seen, I haven't seen them all. So, I mean, as a team, I think we're going to be right there. Hopefully if we have a season, I think we have a real shot to do something big. And obviously I think Shenandoah is going to have another big year, and Bridgewater is up and coming, and they're going to be very good in the ODAC. And, you know, the ODAC's always top-notch for Division III baseball. You know, I like to say it's the ACC of Division III or SEC of Division III baseball, which it really is. I mean, I don't think there's another division in the – or, sorry, conference in Division III that's as deep as the ODAC is. But – and then me personally, you know, I'm just – I think I could have definitely a big year this year. Hopefully I get some opportunities to go out and show what I can do. And, you know, from some talks, you know, I think there's a good chance of that happening. You know, obviously we have to see there are a lot of seniors coming back, which who knows what can happen there. But, you know, I think in this time of Corona, like, you just got to sort of stick together with the team and just be a good teammate. And, I definitely think we have a good group of guys that can do something, and everyone's sort of on the same page and knows their roles. And I think we can do something really big.
All right. Well, Will, thanks for taking some time and talking to me today, and best of luck with this school year and the upcoming season.
Of course. Thank you for having me on.
That was Will Haas of the Stewart's Draft Diamondbacks and Randolph Macon joining me on today's episode of the podcast. He had a fantastic season in the RCBL this past year. He hit .413 with 5 home runs and 19 RBIs for the Diamondbacks, a 1.139 OPS. Just an outstanding season by Will in the RCBL. Somehow he did not make it onto the All-RCBL team. I don't know how. I certainly had him on my ballot. I thought he deserved that recognition this year, but just an outstanding season from Will. And so I look forward to seeing what he does at Randolph-Macon and in the RCBL or wherever he ends up playing next summer as well. Well, that's going to do it for today's episode of Foul Ball Area. Quick announcement, there will not be a Mornings with Matt next Monday. It is Labor Day. I'm going out of town with my girlfriend. We're going to her river house on the, it's really a bay house. If Trey Lyle were on today's episode, he would correct me and say it's a bay since it is on the Chesapeake Bay. But anyway, we're going out of town for the weekend, and so there will not be a Mornings with Matt on Monday. But I hope you all have a great weekend. Enjoy the holiday weekend. Stay safe, stay socially distant, wear your mask when you're out in public, and have a good Labor Day weekend. Thank you all for tuning in to Foul Ball Area. I'm Matthew Atkins. Thanks for listening to the Foul Ball Area podcast. Make sure to leave a review and a rating wherever you get your podcasts, and subscribe so you get new episodes as soon as they come out.